We were quiet. We could read real well, most of us. And I suppose we were short of material or stuff to do, in those days. We didn't have drawing books or anything like that. We did our own coloring on our own tablets and stuff like that. But so we'd have to read our reader three or four times a year, the same thing over and over again. And you'd like to go back over your reader, if we went through the book, have to read it again. We wanted something else, naturally. But our first books that we had in the first grade was, it was a primer, a little brown primer. I forgot the name of this one. But it was like, see, Fanny has an apple, see the kitty, and can kitty run, and kitty can play with the ball, or see the birds in the tree, or something like that. But we never learned by phonics either. We just learned by reading and spelling the words out. And I never did have any trouble. I was a pretty good reader, and I always made a stab. I wasn't going to be the dumb one in the class and sit there. And so I guess it was just that way. I had big determination, and I had wonderful handwriting. And just from a little kid, I could write. I don't write that good today, but I was a real good writer. And I enjoyed work. I made good maps that next to perfection, really. And the teacher had me to drew a pig on the blackboard, for something. And all the kids could look at or draw it or so forth. And anyway, I got up there, and I just went ahead and made that pig just like she did. And she kind of laughed and didn't say anything. But they wanted me to go on and and I could have had a penmanship, become a penmanship teacher at that time. Through the eighth grade, I could have that to do penmanship, because they need teachers so bad. And many teachers went through the eighth grade because they needed teachers so badly. And that's the way Adam Marie Osland got started. Mm-hmm. And many teachers, and then of course then they took a brush up courses later on, whatever they wanted to do. But there is a good person you should ask. She can mm-hmm. tell you a history from way back.
We've talked to her.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Did you ever participate in the programs that they had?
Oh, we certainly did. We really had wonderful programs. We had good singing, and we did all kinds of things. Drills, we'd have Japanese songs, and we'd dress up like different things. And we had real plays where we, as good as anything you practice, see any place else now. And this was in grade school building. And, we're just one building. But I had easy to learn, and at that time, I'm not super brilliant anymore. But anyway, it was nothing for me to learn, things like that. And I enjoyed it, and I loved to act them out.
What are some of the things that you did?
And we had, we had drills, or we had little dances. Not real dances, but, on that folk dance type. And we had tambourines that we had in our drills. And sometimes we'd have a drill, maybe for Thanksgiving. Well, we'd have a tissue paper pumpkin head that looked like little pumpkins with the green vines on a slender vine to go, pumpkins. And we should be, pumpkin heads bright and gay. We ought to have a holiday. And you children ought to be thankful, for all the blessings given thee. So it was real nice. And we had that, we sang and with these, or went around the circle and sang these songs. Then we had patriotic songs. And I think we learned some of the most beautiful patriotic songs I've ever heard. And that was, of course, I was older then. That was during World War I. And Will Carlson, she was in the community, and she was a real go-getter, and, you know, to get people interested and be patriotic and so forth. And I know we learned to sing this Idaho, which means Idaho, gem of the mountains. And Idaho comes from Indian word, sun coming over the mountain. So, and they told about the plains and the hills and so forth, but it was beautiful around the rocks, trees and hills.
What made you decide not to go ahead and be a teacher?
Well, folks had, he had a big family. And I think I would have done very well too in home economics too, well, anything pertaining to all this. But all the kids went to school. They all went through high school except my brother and I. And they went out through college, and Oliver, he went back east to school and was there in college back east. And then my oldest sister went through high school, and then she went to Lewis Normal. And then my three sisters, they went through high school in Moscow, and then Ted went through the university, and Eva became a teacher. I think she went to Normal too at that time. And became a teacher, and she taught school for several years. And then she finally got married. And my twin sisters, they went through high school, but both of them, Alva worked in the store as a clerk. But Alvira, she got married after she got out of high school. And now she's a missionary in South America. She's been a missionary in South America for 28 years.
So how come you didn't become a teacher or a guardian?
Well, like I said, everybody left home, and Mama was getting older, and they felt that they needed some help. And my brother Oscar didn't get, he stayed home until he got married. He married Ruth Kilbury up here. Then, of course, they were on their own. But then my brother, another brother went through high school. He farmed a place. His name was Layton. And then finally, dad had died. And then mother was very poorly. And I kept her up on the halls of place for two years or more and took care of her. And then she kind of wanted to be in her own home, so then we moved down here, and on the home place, because I didn't have water, just a well, and no electricity or anything like that. And it was handier down here to take care of her, and then she would like to be in her home place. So I took care of her for 8 years, and then she died here on the home place. So maybe it was longer than that, was what I'd taken care of before. So, and then, I was married, though, in 1923, and we had five children, and Lois and John were born up at the Halsa place, and I was taking care of Mother at the same time, but we had a girl come in and help for a few days, so I was able to take over again. One girl stayed, she was a cousin, I suppose, stayed for a whole month or so. But, so I guess that's the reason. Maybe I wasn't just supposed to go on. But one thing, they didn't encourage me to go on to high school. I wanted to go, but Mother never mentioned about me going. Everybody else is going. And so it was all right to arrest him, but they weren't too anxious to let me go. And I don't know the reason why, but I
were they less anxious to have their girls go through high school than their boys? Did they encourage
them
less?
Well, no, the other girls got to. They were going to go, that's all they should. And Eva, too. But mother never encouraged me or wanted to say, mentioned about me going to high school. And I guess I'm always a little bit timid. I guess that's where my bad part comes in, that I want to stick up for myself, you know. So when she would mention me going on to high school, in those days, when they went to high school, they always went, you know, if they're going to go on into the field of education or something like that, they had their minds made up. Well, I know I'd done real well in high school, but like I said, the mother and neither father, dad, ever, the boys, dad's always had money to the boys. I thought the girls had a little harder to get money, you know, to spend and so forth. And boys had it easier coming, you know. They'd say, oh, do you need some money? But, you know, I always felt that the girls had harder that way. But old dad, you know, he was pretty well to do, but you know, not flush or anything like that. But always had struggle at least make, you know, make money every year. But and that never mentioned about me going on to school. I don't know why, and I guess I was one of those people who just didn't speak up again enough. Because I find myself today sometimes getting predicament because I don't stand up for myself sometimes, you know, so that's what it is. So I guess it's my timidness, and then I probably feel bad about it and then keep it to myself.
I wanted to ask you some things about when you were a kid that you were telling me
before. Oh, yeah. You know, I was always doing some things. I was the one that always going to have to do things. Oh. Well, I wanted to. That was one thing. I had to be doing something. You know, just no monkey business. That's me. I had to be doing something. But I was the one that noticed everything. I saw everything. And, of course, that's one reason I probably would get in Dutch, because I saw more. People wouldn't have to say anything. Nobody had to mention it. But it was anything. Well, I'd see it, and I'd know it, and I couldn't help it. That's just my nature. Well, anyway, but we always went after the cows. And we went... Oh, the canyon is almost about 3/4 mile deep, but we'd have to go over about 3 different hills, you know, down and go to further south. And every night we'd bring the cows home, and we'd always have 6, 7, maybe 8, maybe cows and some extra calves or something. And drive them up to the top of the hill, and of course we'd exercise in the hunting for those cows, and then coming out of the canyon, cows would always beat us, you know, walk so much faster, or else they'd poke and they'd have to go back and get one. But anyway, this is every night we did that, and it was either Ted and I or Leighton and I. It seemed like I always was with them a lot. But one night, I wasn't with them. I guess I was doing something else. And later years, when Leighton and Teddy, I think, was supposed to get the cows, and they hunted for 3 days, and they'd come home and wouldn't find the cows. And Dad said, "My God, to milk those cows, they're going to, you know, they won't milk, you know, if you go too long, you ruin the cow." And so they went for about 3 nights trying to find them, and they never come. And Dad thought he was just maybe scared of the cows, or scared to go down and for bears or something, you know. But it wasn't that. So then Dad got on his horse and he went down there, and there was no herd laws in those days and not very many fences. And so they went from this east pasture, clear around Trout's pasture, and up the canyon, followed the railroad track, and came out of Try. So you found the cows just as you come into Try then. So you could see why the boys couldn't find the cows. And we used to go down. There's many houses in the canyon at that time. There was the Cusick House by the people that called Cusick. I don't know too much about him, but the older children knew more about him than I did, but they moved away. And then there was the Wheeler House, and there was a log cabin, and this one, it wasn't a kind of quite large, a long room, and it was all papered with German newspapers, and so we couldn't read them. But it was that, what you call this, handwriting, you know, so curled up so that you can hardly understand it, you know.
Oh, it was really the old-fashioned German.
Old-fashioned, yeah, script. And I think it's beautiful, but I couldn't read anything. Of course, I probably wouldn't be that good in German anyway, but it was that kind of words that you couldn't begin to try and read. Then,
did they have little gardens?
Yes, they had. I don't know too much about the gardens because they too had pulled out. I guess they couldn't just live and make a living there. Although I think some of that soil was nice and rich down there, but there wasn't enough of it. And so, but they had planted bluegrass lawns, and they were well kept, and fence around it, and there was apple trees and a few trees that I noticed, and berry bushes like gooseberries and currants and blackberries. And then they always had such pretty flowers. They had sweet williams and other flowers that we'd go down there and pick many years afterwards. And they would grow up in the brush around, way out from the lawn, and grow up in the, they grow almost, 2.5, 3 feet tall. And then they'd have these great big heads, almost as big as saucers. They were so pretty. We finally quit going down there because my cousins moved away and we were alone. But we used to go once or twice a year down there. Oh, they had some apples too. It tasted almost good, almost stray apples. Oh, it tastes good too. But then as we got older and so forth, we didn't go down there. But one thing I think scared us, and that's when we went with our cousins, my two cousins, Gladys and Alice, are. And we took a notion to follow the fence line, put a new fence in there. So we followed the fence line clear to the bottom of the creek there, and thought we was going to play around there. But we saw a bunch of tiny snakes. They were almost white. I guess just newly born, and they had such big heads on them. So we figured they were rattler snakes. So we decided we better get out of there. We didn't bother getting those good. And so we walked back. And so I think that's about the last time we'd been down in that canyon. But there was other, the Porter place was interesting. We used to go down there after they left. They used to went to Burnridge School. And the girls' names were Mamie and Isabel. And the boy's name was Sam. And they could have had another sister, but I don't remember. But anyway, we used to walk to school, and the older kids were higher up in school, grade school. And they always had a good time walking to school. And there was the Pearson girls, and they were four girls in the Pearson family. And then it was Selma Rubric and Edith Carlson and Minnie R. And then Emma and Gladys and Alice. So there's quite a few young girls going to school. Of course, they almost seem like they're all like, they were growing up that you'd think that they were almost 20 years old. They weren't that old, but they wore longer dresses and everything. And worse at all, and I was just a little tight. But anyway.
Do you remember the canyon getting logged at all?
Oh, yeah, quite. Yes, I do. Let's see something more about it. I'll tell this a little bit of the school. Yeah. Anyway, Hawaii to school, but in those days, everybody had to have a gate to go into the yard. We had big board gates, you know, with several boards across and supports and hooks to fasten your gate to the fence there to open and shut. Everybody had a gate. I think it's because it used to pasture. Well, it was a style, something new, so everybody had a gate. So. All of these women, especially Selma Rubig and all our girls and the Pearson girls, and I don't know, he just probably told them practically out of school. Anyway, they'd all congregate there, you know, and talk about the books like Annie Green Gables, is what you call it, and all the Peppers family and the Tom Sawyer and what's this other one? What's that early one?
You'd get together and talk.
Well, they talk about them and the Little Women and so forth and I don't know. I don't think that this. They used to talk about one of Helen and her babies, but I didn't know which book that was in. And anyway, they'd always they mentioned that, and then they'd look at me because I was Helen, you know. And so I heard exactly what they said and kind of laughed when I went by because talking about Helen and her babies, and I didn't know if that was in Little Women or a Pepper book or as. Uncle Tom's Cabin, too, was an interesting book that the teacher used to read these books 5 minutes after noon recess, as kind of to settle the kids down. So they were interesting books. But anyway, they made a remark of Helen and her babies, you know, and I'd walk past, you know, not paying attention to it. So then this year, or was it last year? I wrote to Minnie and I said, I remember how you used to talk about Helen and her babies, you know, but I wouldn't let on that I heard what you said, but I just walked by. And so she wrote back and said, I didn't think you remembered that. But you know, if you hear any of those funny remarks, you want to kind of make you feel a little bit timid. Anyway, little Mike Redeem. They lived at the brick house, and he couldn't start school. And he'd always stand out of the gate, you know, watch us go by. And he just loved people. And so he'd holler, "Hello, Hen! Hello, Hen!" He couldn't say the L in it. And I was embarrassed to tears, you know, because it was like calling me Hen, because he manned him. Say Helen, but he couldn't say Helen. So I guess I didn't show quite so much interest in, you know, because I liked him and all that, but, you know, he didn't know any better. He couldn't spell, say the L, you know, but made me feel kind of let down, you know, because he called me Hen in place of Helen. He was cute, though, and he'd have his eyes through the bars of the gate. You was asking what?
I asked whether you remember the logging.
Oh, yeah. They logged. All these canyons were, all the trees were gone. They were just, the hillsides were just stripped like they were, well, you could see where they pulled the trees down. And they had an engine in the bottom of the canyon, they call it a donkey, where they pull these trees down, and they'd saw them, and then they'd pull it, have the trees pulled down to the bottom, and then they'd, I don't know whether chopped the limbs off up there or down the bottom, but anyway, and then they ran to the mill. And this creek that goes through our canyon, they had banked that and made a dam, and so they had a mill pond down there, and oh, they shipped out an awful lot of timber. And in this mill pond, the salmon would come upstream to spawn. And sometimes they'd catch a great big salmon down there. So anyway, one of my, Lois, my daughter, when she was about 7th, 8th grade, she took another kid with her down there. They're going to fish in the creek, and because they like to fish. And so she caught a salmon, and she told this other kid, that, come and help me. She said, I need some help because the fish are too big for them, for a hook. But he thought she maybe got just a little old, tiny fish, and he wasn't about the one to come down there and see that. So anyway, she finally got his attention and they hooked it or got it two or three times, but then they finally lost it, you know, and it got away from him. But there's quite deep pools in this creek, and now even today that you can go down there and maybe fish small fish. But the bears are eating them up now, so bears just live on them. Elmer Johnson, just two or three years ago, went down there, and he was going to fish. He likes to go down there once a year or so and see if there's any fish. Well, he went down there, and there was a mother bear and a cub or two and an old father bear there. And so the old bear got on his hind legs, and he started to walk toward him, so he thought he'd better go home. So he went up that logging road, and he, quite a ways, he turned around, and here he's still coming walking. So I think that's probably about the last time he went down there, but there was a little cub up in the tree, and of course, they didn't like that for a while. So we've had quite a few bears in later years. We never had so many before because they logged there and disturbed a lot, you know, but now they moved off the mountains and coming down to the valleys, I guess, more.
Can you tell me that story again where your mother and you saw the cougars?
Oh, yeah. This is before I ever started school. And I had had pneumonia about three times after we come to Idaho. And so I wasn't very well, and I was sitting there on a chair and kind of shaking and weak. Anyway, one day Mother told me to come to the window quick, she says. And there was two cougars. They had long tails. I don't know what kind they were, but anyway, they walked past our place just like a team of horses. They were tall, almost about 30 inches tall, or maybe taller than that, maybe 2 or 3 feet, 2 feet, 2 and a half. Anyway, they were big, and they were walking side by side, and we watched them as they went down the hill and went down to our pasture, and that's it. I haven't seen them since, but there are cougars here. Different people have killed cougars off and on. They even tackle a cow over at the machine shed was all scratched up and streaks on its back when they figured it was a cougar that had got him. I think some people went, and I don't know where they found him, but I thought maybe they had killed this big cougar, and that was on the upper end of the ridge that they found him, I think, in like the Olson tree woods there.
Can you tell me about when you know, the camp, the logging camp that you used to go down to?
Oh, yeah. That was at the mill.
Oh, that was the mill?
Bobard, yeah. When they were logging down there, Mrs. Name? Mrs. Peterson. And Mrs. John Peterson and somebody else was cooking down there. I don't remember who was. Miss John Peterson and her sister-in-law, I think. I used to know her name too. At the logging camp, and they had quite a few big buildings down there because they had bunks for the men, and then they had big dining rooms and so forth, and they'd and then when the mail came, the train always brought the mail to the people. The train would stop and deliver their mail there. But anyway, they wanted butter. Miss Peterson wanted some butter, so Mother churned butter, and I took it down there, and I was all alone. I went down by myself, and I went down our canyon, and walked clear to the bottom until we got to Boulevard, which is quite a ways too, because you go past the Carlson Canyon too. And as I was just going to go around the corner of this bunkhouse, it was a great big rock by as high as this table. And then it was just path wide enough for me to, between this rock and the corner of the bunkhouse, to get past. It was a trail there. Well, there was a great big snake, and it just darted under this big rock. Well, I went on past the corner and went into the house and brought this butter. And then I played with their daughter, for Gladys, for Peterson, quite a bit, for an hour or so. I walked past that rock and made it okay. And then I walked up the Carlson Canyon, and old Joe Carlson always had some bad bulls. So I thought, well, if that bull comes after me, I picked up a club and I thought, I'll just swing this around my head and I'll be all right. But I didn't see the bull, and I came up and went up to the house, and then I followed the road home. It's a mile to back up to our place. But anyway, it was quite a walk, and being alone, because you could see most anything as you go down there. And many times when we used to go down and get the cows too, we used to have to go in that canyon too, and we'd see snakes maybe in the spring where they all cows and to drink water and so forth, big ones. So, but I'll always live as in fear of snakes. I have all my life. I probably would have been a missionary if I wasn't so scared of snakes. So I don't think I could have gone to a foreign country, but I guess maybe the Lord knew that I couldn't go with snakes, although I know that he would protect me and so forth. But my sister went, and my stead, I guess. I was supposed to stay home, I guess, and help take care of my old the mother and dad and so forth. And I've been a busy person all my life, and I don't know what I'm doing, but maybe just keeping the home together.
Did you, there was a story you told me about chewing gum last time,
Oh, this is good. This is when Dad had worked on the road. Did Dad tell you that? Dad had worked on the railroad, on the First Continental Railroad, and where they drove the Golden Spike in Provo, Utah, where the railroad met over the whole United States. And there was nothing for the men to do, so before they'd go to sleep at night, they had a kind of a bunkhouse, or maybe it was some kind of sidecar or something that they had. I don't remember what they had. They had something there that they go and gamble, you know. And so Dad, he gambled one night there, and he lost all his money. And so, he was just beside himself because he'd lost $300, and he was going to leave, and he didn't know what to do with himself. So he said he'd just have to gamble one more night. So he gambled like all get out and got his money back. Then taught him a lesson that he'd never gamble anymore. So he got so strict with his family that they couldn't even chew chewing gum or play cards or anything that was gambling. That was out. And when you didn't smoke, you didn't chew, and you didn't swear, he really, I guess, maybe learned a lesson, and that was good for us too, because my sisters and brothers didn't smoke, none of them, and they didn't drink. And when the chewing gum, Watkins man would come, his name was Johns from Julietta, he'd always like to recognize the children until he'd give his gum. And so of course we were so many in the family, and so when Dad came home from work, well, here we'd be chewing his gum, you know, his taste is so good, and we'd pull it, you know, or we'd pop it, you know, and oh, Dad gets mad, so I said, Mama says, here comes Papa, here comes Papa. So we'd stick our gum maybe under the pantry shelf or something and stick it to it, or under the table or someplace. Each one had a place for their own, you know. And then, of course, we'd chew that gum, you know, off and on, you know, for a whole week or more, you know, whatever. The thing about it, going and get our gum, you know, we'd chew it. But then finally we'd forget about it. And of course, then whenever we wanted to clean up, they'd find the gum stuck here and there that we'd left behind. But anyway, it was kind of nice that Dad was strict, and he learned his lesson well and helped us too, because he wanted us kids to be good kids, and they all turned out to be good. Mother had a nice family. Mother and Dad had a nice family. And they weren't cross, you know, real bad people, you know, who all do some things to get into mischief. Just like, I went to, many years ago, this would have been about 1910, we went to the Ringling Brothers in Moscow, Ringling Brothers Circus, and so we saw all these trapeze acts and all the things that they done there, and walking ropes and so forth. But anyway, it was so exciting to see this circus. So, and I think it was more fascinating to the boys, because when they got home, well, then they fixed up in the barn boards and attached to the rafters in the roof of the barn. And on each side, and would try and stand on them or swing on them or something, you know, like they did in the circus. And they played around until, oh, maybe somebody finally get hurt. Maybe not hurt that bad, but something stopped. The rope slipped out of one end or something, and they had a collision or something. But one of the craziest things, we all did it. During haying season, or after haying season, they always had big beams, big square beams, to hold the barns together from one side to the other, and then beams up and down. Well, we would dare ourselves out there on these beams. Then we'd say, one for the money, and two for the show, and three to get ready, and the fourth to go, and then we went down and jump on hay. Well, that worked just fine, folks. There was a lot of hay in the barn. There was lots of fun, but we'd go out there. But it was risky, because that beam that they put on was so slick and slick from putting the hay in the barn all the time, and it was practically shiny. It was so slick. And here we'd get it out there on there and jump down. And sometimes we'd jump when the barn was almost empty, and there would be rails, fence posts and stuff in the bottom. Why they did that, they probably did it so there'd be a little bit of air underneath, so it would heat, the hay will heat if it's low down. Anyway, here we're jumping without any hay hardly in the barn, but it was, I guess we were young, it didn't hurt us very bad. But I think it was, I don't know whether it could have been 4th of July. But Leighton, he was younger than I was, 2 years younger, and he was going to jump off, and he hit his head in this square beam and cut his forehead, and deep gash, and Dad, he sewed it up. In those days, you didn't run to the doctor, but he sewed up the scar on his forehead.
Your father could just sew it up?
Yeah, he sewed it. And
did he just get a regular medium thread? He must have had stuff.
They always mm-hmm. called it the cat guts. It's what it was, thread out of cat guts, and that run, dissolves, and it does if they use it today. And so I guess it's popping, but I don't know what to call that kind, but that's what it was. And anyway, it happened, the same, similar thing happened to Teddy. Oh, he had a rough time. Well, He had several bad things that happened to him. But, should tell this. Teddy, he got erysipelas. Well, he was playing with a kid at school. And he got scratched on his neck. And so mother was washing clothes when he come home in the afternoon, because she had such a big washing with such a big pan, and washed my hand. And so she looked at it, but she thought, well, just a little scratch, you know, should hurt. It'll go over pretty soon. But she didn't think about putting anything on it. You know, she could put something on it, even turpentine would have helped. But, because that was our old standby, it was turpentine. For every cut or hurt you got, or wire cut, but we never got lockjaw or anything like that from it. But anyway, he got erysipelas. And he was so sick, I'm at a high temperature. And he was there two or three weeks, you know, and he just wasted away and had such headache he could hardly stand it and so forth. So old Joe Carlson come up, and our neighbor from Port Townsend, and he said, I'll tell you what you do. He said, you grate a tub full of potatoes. And then you take a big sheet and you put him in that and wrap these potatoes all around him, and then I guess put black around that. And
cook the potatoes.
And all you just grate them, raw potatoes.
And just put them right
on. And put them on him, and they put them on him. And the crisis, they figured it'd be about 2 o'clock that night, and it's been almost a month. And that night, he went to sleep, but he came out of it. You know, he finally came out. Well, the fever left him, and the headache left him. The potatoes had drawn all this infection out of him, and he was just a limp and weak as a dish rag. He lost all his hair, he was just, I had to learn to walk all over again. It was just pitiful. And he couldn't start school. He didn't go to school, you know. This was in the spring, I think. And he couldn't go to next school till the next year. I don't know when he did go. In the fall, he went to school. And he had to wear a hat. The boy wore a blue serge cap on his head, and he had a little research suit, and he went to school, and then he had to wear the hat in the school too, because he freeze on his head, you know, but he didn't have any hair. But when his birthday came, Dad, that following year, Dad bought him a nice wagon, coaster wagon, and better not put this one down, but somebody might read it. Anyway, but he finally got better. But then when he got to be, about 12, maybe 9, 10, I don't know, he was riding his coaster wagon down the lane, down toward the bottom of the hill. And it was 4th of July, and they had some friends home over, but he caught his leg in the fence and took out a big piece on his knee, or under his knee. And so Dad sewed that thing back, and no anesthetics. I never saw anything like it. But that wasn't the worst of it. He finally got over that, and he had that scar. But the next thing, when he was 14, maybe, he got ringworm. Mm-hmm. And he had ringworm, he used to like cats, you know, play with cats. And anyway, he got ringworm in his hair and all over his body, big as dollars. Mm-hmm. So he thought he should go to the doctor. And but we always cured it with turpentine lard, and that would kill it. Turpentine would kill about anything, you know, but lard kept it from burning. So he went to the doctor in Troy, and he put this black iodine, painted all those sores with black iodine. And he come home, and he burned him up, you know, one burn is bad enough, but to have 12, 13 burns all over your whole body, that he thought, Dad called him up, what you doing, boy, you're going to kill him, he said. And he says, put some Vaseline on. So he put the Vaseline on all those sores, even lard would have done it too. Mm-hmm. And for he had, and they put bandages on it. Mm. And the next morning, the flesh just dropped out in hunks. And it made holes, just holes in the skin, everywhere. And then, of course, then that flesh came out, and it finally healed up, but they used Vaseline, and I don't know if they had anything else that they could use at that stage. To heal him up again. But that poor boy sure suffered. It was just terrible. But it's just too bad we shouldn't let him go on if a man was going to do a thing like that. The iodine, those days, were just black old paste, you know. Just, oh, terrible.
It was really strong stuff.
Oh, it was strong. Yeah, and the flesh dropped out about a whole inch or better deep. Wherever it was, oh, it was just, boy, and he had scars all his life from that. But, so he had gone through so much, like, bad things like that. But, you know, he went on to high school and through the university, and he took electronics, or electrical engineering, electronics, I think. And he got 100, mind you, on his test. And he went back, then he's going to go back to Chicago to a school. And then the first test he gave him, then he got another 100 test right there, the first test. And, you know, it's just the first test he gave him. But anyway, they said they'd give him a job. Well, they gave him a job selling wash machines and crazy stuff like that, you know, they promised him some kind of job. And my brother was going to school in Rock Island. That's not too far from Chicago. Well, anyway, there was a gang, I guess. And as people would, he sold a few wash machines. But anyway, I don't know how he got, I'm not sure whether he had a car or something else, but anyway, they had gangsters that would steal cars and take them to a certain garage, and you have to pay so much to get them back and so forth. You know, it was just a gang, something gangster there that was wrong. They were just stealing and selling and exchange or something like that. But anyway, Ted finally came back home, and then he worked.
I asked you about the tuberculosis, and you can leave out any names, you know, people. Tell about it, about it on the
ridge. I was going to say about, we were many, many, many people on Burnt Ridge going to school, you know, the highest roads around. Well, I think there was 46, maybe some said it could have been 50 earlier, or more than that. But we were an awful bunch of kids going through this one room schoolhouse.
Let me ask you, how did they treat the kids who had tuberculosis?
Well, they always said that, well, they didn't know as much about tuberculosis in those days. People were harder up, and didn't have the food. I think they probably were, many of them, I think probably, well, you can't really say they, people were good cooks. The people were good cooks, and they had gardens. But they always thought then that they should have fresh air And they always thought about milk being a good product. But I think too, but I would dare to mention that. I don't think people didn't have, they didn't have very many clothes, and like I said, that you wore, most people wore, maybe wore one suit of underwear all week, you know, and the next week you put on another suit of underwear. That's in the wintertime, you know, and lots of times they make dresses out of men's wool pants, you know, the pant legs, they would make petticoats, and of course they were going to be warm because they had to walk to school. They'd walk those 3 miles to school. And of course, our clothes probably wasn't all really warm enough for lots of people. And then they had so far to go, and probably didn't eat big enough breakfast for one thing. Too, but I think it wasn't enough sanitation, I think, more than anything else. But I do think that most all this was caused from getting the tuberculosis was through the water bucket, you know, because nobody else had it afterwards. So, and nobody else got it after we got the drinking fountain. So I think maybe better just lay to that many of the school children got TB from drinking drinking water, drinking water, what'd you say? Drinking water with a pail with a dip in it? Where? Drinking water. With a water bucket. With a water bucket.
Were you, once someone got tuberculosis, were you not supposed to go near them?
No. It's that crazy thing. You never knew if they had tuberculosis. Nobody knew they had tuberculosis. I think so. They got sick enough that weak and puny that they stayed home. I think that's all the way it went. See, it went so far, nobody knew. Like the Puritans up here, and that's where they got all that tin on the barns and the house. They had two boys and that died, and they hemorrhaged every so often, vomited up blood, and I think maybe Clara, she was a nurse, but she died too. But she died from blood poisoning, but I think her blood was so thin that, blood poisoning couldn't attack her. But she never looked real well. She was so pale and so forth. But I wouldn't dare mention her, but she died with blood poisoning by getting scratched or something in 2 or 3 days. Hmm. But these two boys, they were sick, and they put them in tents. The Pearsons were in tents outside and slept. And my sister, my oldest sister, she was sent to Colorado, Denver, Colorado, to the sanitarium there. But my youngest sister, she was 15, and Dad put a tent out here, and she slept out there in the tent. But
was that so that they'd get lots of fresh air?
Fresh air, and then way out too, and maybe it would be right around the rest of the children too. But I still think, but today, you know, you can cure TB in 6 months, easy, maybe sooner than that, with penicillin or sulfur or something. But those days, but if I think they needed more nourishing food than they possibly get, you know, you probably had too much of the same thing, you know how it is in those days. But we were much more fortunate, but I think my oldest sister worked too hard because she used to carry water from down the bottom of the hill and up the lane to the house, and you know, with a big family, that water bucket was always empty, and that was no good for her. And I think she worked too hard, and she looked like
she got water from down by the creek.
Well, it was a spring well down in there. So one, and then when they carried it up, and when they washed it, took a little drag or sled, they call it sled. It just boards across, two runners in them. And I don't think they even had, it may had metal on the bottom of those runners, I don't know, but they, otherwise I think it's just two boards, but it's turned up on the end, so like a sled. So it would slide and they'd haul a barrel full of water whenever they washed clothes. Well, we didn't do that very long here, but anyway, she was the oldest girl, and she probably got a lot of the blunt, you know, hard work, and every new house, the house not finished, you know, Dad built the house so much, and then, and the attitude, but just when they first come here, maybe she worked too hard. And Auntie R up here, she died with tuberculosis, and she was in a tent. And Ernie's mother died with TB now, and she wasn't trying. So I see, it was just in the community. And another thing, we had communion cup, like they always say, that with wine. Real wine, you know, is supposed to kill germs and stuff like that, so you shouldn't get it from the next person. But people drink out of the one cup, and and your Bantu, I'm sure, wasn't healthy, you know. Some people had big long mustaches and everything else, and beards and everything else. But then Pastor Berg came, and he told me it was unlawful to have a single cup for sanitation's sake. They always figured that one thing to believe, if you have faith enough, you know, you wouldn't get tuberculosis from that, or the wine is a purifier. But I know we didn't like it for that reason either. So I was glad when they said to that they want to have individual glasses and so much better. But anyway, drinking water, a water bucket with a dipper in it. The school children got tuberculosis from drinking water from a water bucket with a dipper that all of us drank out of the same dipper and carried the germs. After Dad bought a drinking container where everyone had to have their own cup, no one else got TB from, nobody else got TB.
Can you tell me something about, you know, the prune dryer that your father
had? Oh yeah. That was easy. Anyway, Dad had a prune dryer. We had about 20 acres of fruit, prunes and prune trees, Well, we had pears and apples and peaches, and we had peaches too. They grew wonderful to the foster garden. We had it for quite a few years. But the prunes, that was interesting, because that harvest lasted a long time. And my tool's boy stayed out of public school. I stayed out of school in the fall because we had so many prunes to pick, and Dad dried prunes in a big prune dryer. It had a kiln where you put a fire under the building, and it would be like an oven that would dry all these prunes. And we had around, I couldn't say, close to maybe 48 doors, big doors like a house door. And inside these doors, we had about 24 doors on each side, and each side would be a lot of grates that you'd put in there. And that would, just like you put in oven grates, but these were wooden grates made out of wooden sticks. And they were about maybe 36 by 40 long, maybe longer than that, but it was that long anyway, 36 or better. And each grate was that big. And in one door, you'd put maybe 12, 15 grates at least in each door. And they were all filled with prunes on each grate filled up. And then these 24 doors went clear around on both sides. And and this big fire, what they call a kiln, would dry these prunes. And then they'd have to change the ones from the bottom and put them to the top so the top ones would come down to the bottom so they'd dry more evenly. And Dad would haul that he washed these prunes in three or four buckets a bath with lye water. Oh, about 60 boxes, big boxes to the depot, and in Troy. Every day he'd go with 60 boxes of prunes, and as long as the season lasted, and the chipping from Troy to Spokane, and from there it went out all over the countries, the United States, or wherever, shipped out to different parts of the United States. And there was several dryers. Well, there was another dryer on Bird Ridge, and so Dad said, well, it's no use for me to have a prune dryer anymore. I believe I won't dry any more prunes anymore. We'll just, if we wanted to dry, we'll just take them over to Westbrook's. Well, he took them to Westbrook's. No. It wasn't long, or just another year or so, the Westbrook's dryer burned down. So then, of course, we just, people came and bought them and use them for fruit and jam in the fall when people come by. Okay, that's the way we then our prunes after that. I would dare tell this message today. We were a big family, and Mother used to put up 60 gallons worth of prune butter. And it lasted till next year, although Mama would give a lot of that away too, lots of times, to relatives that didn't have any, you know. But she put up that much. And Mother would bake 16 loaves of bread every time she baked. And she'd bake two or three times a week. And she was the best bread baker, and making buns all the way. So good, just real delicious bread. But she was a big family, and they ate lots of, like, old mama canned meat. She canned like 100 quarts of meat and several hundred quarts of fruit and vegetables and so forth. And I remember when they learned how to can beef and meat, they learned that from the university, how to take care of the meat and canned meat, so it'd keep and all this. And same way the corn and the vegetables, that all came that way. I think so.
You mean before they taught you didn't canned vegetables at all?
Yeah, well, Mama always, we always canned, but you know, to get certain things to keep, you know, people didn't can it, they'd dry it. You know, one method was that they'd, our folks never did it, but many people did. They would take cream or milk and scald it or something like that, put the corn in that, and then I suppose by having this hot milk or something, then they'd hang them in sacks and cloth sacks on the line until they dry out thoroughly. And then they would put them away, they would store them dry, put them in containers and stuff, and then take out what corn they wanted, you know, and cook. And it was real good corn. You'd be surprised. It was just so, oh, so exceptionally good that you just could hardly believe it would be so good. You know, it didn't have an old taste or anything, it tasted so fresh. I don't understand today, but it wasn't enough cream or that to hurt it, I guess, but they scalded it. And that, you have to always have you always batch your things. Well, they used this hot milk or hot cream, whatever they did, and it was good. It was very tasty. And it was dry corn, they put it in containers and keep it, and just scoop off as much as you want for a meal or something. It was good. I was surprised. But Mother canned from way back in Oklahoma, so I tomatoes and peaches and stuff like that, so she must have known it for a long time. In Sweden, they generally, like the berries and stuff, they wouldn't can them much. It seemed like she said that you could just put sugar on them and they just keep definitely. Berries weren't that touchy, so if you wash them and so forth. So that's what they did. And that's what the Indians did. They either dried it and hung them by, hung them up. And so they dry or nothing get into them or so forth. Here, I'm making all the difference.
Would you help out a lot at home, like when she was canning and stuff?
Oh, yeah, we all did. We all worked and helped. We never, always had a job to do. But my older sister, she did a lot of sewing. She sewed for us kids, you know. And then when she went on to school and was gone, well, then I would sew up my own dress. And we didn't know. It worked just easy. We all sewed, you know, and never had much work. We never had so many dresses, but we had looked real nice, you know. And materials weren't that expensive. The better expensive materials would come to, but maybe better expensive material, around 35, 45 cents, you know. And Monica, when she came to this country, she could buy all wool, beautiful dress wool for about 10 cents a yard, 10, 12 cents a yard. And some materials were only 3 or 4 cents, 5 cents a yard. Well, you know, it didn't cost very much, you know, at that time. But everything's just gone sky high now, you know what I meant.
Would you get to pick out what what material you want?
Well, I never picked out very much of my material. I think Mother was good about it. Well, I think for Christmas one time I said I wanted a pink dress, and my sister wanted a blue dress, and it was light wool, nice stuff. And then we had a dressmaker to make those in town, because, Mother was a bunch of kids, you know, so too busy, you know. And could always do that. We had so much cattle and lots of milk cows and cream cans. And we had chickens, not too often, and chickens enough to keep us and sell the eggs. But we didn't sell eggs unless we had too many that couldn't use them. But Dad had big herds of cows and then made milk cows and stuff. So there was six boys, I think it was, if I count them up. I have to always count them up. Isn't that crazy? I have to count them. Oliver, Oscar, Teddy, Layton, Russell, and that was Boyd, but he died. And four. I guess I got them all. Oliver, Oscar, Teddy, Layton, Russell, Boyd, and there were six. And we were, I think, five girls. Hilma, Minnie, and I, and Eva, Nelva, and Elvira. Shoot, we were 12. And twins, and they were Elva and Elvira. And Hilma, Minnie, Eva, and Elva, and Elvira. That's six. And so mother had, she had a baby that died a day or two. And he couldn't breathe. There was something wrong with him. She all died. So we were 12. You know, he lived. But boy died at four. He got walking typhoid or something. Oh, you come. Oh, wait. I think by everybody went to a whooping cough siege. But I wasn't that bad, but my kids got whooping cough awful bad. But that's an awful thing he had. He is coughing, he is. Oh, and that stays with me for a whole year or more. But of course, I only have charges and stuff, so keep it from. But I wasn't that bad off. I was kind of fortunate that way. The kids got chicken pox. Well, I was feeling sorry because I didn't have more. Because I had all the water to eat and I little. And I got to sit there and have bread with kind of thick cream on it and sprinkle sugar on that. And they were eating the milk and sugar and cream around their bread and it tasted so good, you know. And I wasn't sick enough and so I didn't have any. Anyway, she was a nice person. She made wonderful bread. She did. But we was invited to the birthday party over there. All his cousins, the kids, and the rich. And she had, I don't remember, we had something. But she had these brown cookies, you know, big brown cookies. And she'd pass these cookies and pass these cookies to us kids who were sitting outside, you know. And you couldn't bite them. You just couldn't bite them or break the thing, you know. You just hardly rock. And so their dog was on the table. And we couldn't eat them because of bad teeth. So we from down there, the dog would chew those cookies up. Brown molasses cookie or something. It should have been soft, but they were just, she just couldn't get your teeth in. And she'd pass them, you know, and it was a shame not to take any either, you know. So I don't know what everybody else did, but I know that's where I got mine. Mine went under the table to the dog because I couldn't bite them. They just hurt my teeth. I just couldn't bite them. I'm afraid to break my teeth off. And so,
would girls and boys go to those parties?
We were, I think, all girls at Mrs. Decker's party for her daughter Mac Beatrice. But Adam Smith, and she'd have boys and girls, and she'd always try and couple up the boy and the girl together and sit together, you know, and eat off the same plates, you know, and because we were short on dishes plates. But I never liked that very well, you know. I never did. But she was always kind of throwing people together, you know. We were just looking, you know, couldn't be more than 79 or something. But she always tried to couple of girls up with the boys, and that I never cared for that. Sometimes you get over a messy boy, you know, that kind of sloppy stuff. I don't go through it.